Good morning and welcome to Simply Finance. It's Sunday, April 28th. On today's show, MasterCard's leading lady, Myra Vivacqua, is helping to shape Caribbean finance, and the financial regulator will scrutinize the governance of Nongkyup Financial Group. Plus, Adani Connect sets a benchmark with a construction financing framework of $1.44 billion. This coverage and more, up next. I'm David, and you're listening to Simply Finance. We start off with MasterCard making strides to foster digital transformation and financial inclusion in the Caribbean. And leading those efforts is Myra Vivacqua, the company's cluster lead for the region. Bella joins us now with more on Vivacqua's role and vision. Bella, what can you tell us about MasterCard's goals in the Caribbean?
Vivacqua says her main objective is to ensure every Caribbean citizen has access to and can benefit from the digital economy. MasterCard is working to achieve this by building partnerships with financial institutions, fintechs, governments, and merchants across the region. The aim is to develop faster, easier, and more convenient digital payment solutions that cater to the needs of Caribbean consumers.
And Vivacqua brings an interesting background to this role, having worked in marketing and retail in her native Brazil before joining MasterCard. How has her career trajectory positioned her for success leading the Caribbean cluster?
Prior to taking on the Caribbean role in 2023, Vivacqua led digital consumer solutions, tokenization, and network products for MasterCard in Latin America. She supported the region's digital transformation by bringing secure, differentiated solutions to consumers. Before that, she led the marketing practice of MasterCard's data and services in Latin America, helping partners with data-driven marketing programs. With an MBA from Duke University, 13 years at MasterCard, and experience across different markets, she seems well-equipped to drive the company's Caribbean strategy.
Interesting. And beyond her professional pursuits, how is Vivacqua working to create opportunities for women and give back to the community?
Vivacqua serves as the executive sponsor of MasterCard's Women Leadership Network in Latin America. She's also a board member of Be Strong International, a nonprofit dedicated to helping families and communities build healthier relationships. So empowering women and strengthening communities seem to be priorities for her.
Looking ahead, what is MasterCard's vision for fostering financial inclusion in the Caribbean?
Vivacqua says MasterCard is leveraging technology to develop innovative financial solutions that can bring traditionally marginalized or underserved segments into the formal financial system. The company is collaborating with allies and partners in the region to co-create products and services with that inclusion goal in mind. With the digital acceleration spurred by the pandemic, there appears to be a real opportunity and imperative to expand access across the Caribbean.
Thanks for that report, Bella. It will be interesting to see how MasterCard's financial inclusion efforts in the Caribbean unfold and their ultimate impact. Shifting our focus to South Korea, the country's Financial Supervisory Service, or FSS, is set to launch regular inspections into the governance of Nongkyup Financial Group. This comes as the group's majority stakeholder, the National Agricultural Cooperative Federation, also known as Nongkyup, has been accused of impeding proper internal controls within its financial subsidiaries. For more on this, we're joined by our correspondent. What can you tell us about the FSS's decision to launch these inspections?
The FSS announced on April 24th that it would begin regular inspections of Nongkyup Financial Group and the National Agricultural Cooperative Federation starting in mid-May. This decision follows the regulator converting ongoing spot checks that were initiated last month into these more comprehensive regular inspections. The FSS plans to take a deep dive into the financial group's unique governance system and examine its compliance with its major shareholder, the NACF. It's important to note that unlike other financial holding groups, Nongkyup Financial Group is 100% owned by the NACF.
And it seems some recent financial misconduct has prompted further intervention by the FSS. What can you tell us about that?
That's right. In February, there was an embezzlement case involving approximately 10.9 billion won, or about $7.9 million, that occurred at NH Nonghyup Bank. And in a separate incident at another branch, an employee embezzled 200 million won by canceling funds without authorization, targeting a naturalized Korean customer of foreign origin who was inexperienced in financial matters. An FSS official explained that NH Bank branches are likely to have vulnerabilities in their internal control systems, as employees from the NF, who have not been verified for their financial expertise, are in charge of overseeing these controls while serving as district heads.
The FSS also seems to be concerned about the NACF exerting undue influence over the management of its financial affiliates. Despite a separation of credit and economic activities back in 2012 that made Nonghyup Financial Group structurally independent, there have still been criticisms of the NACF's influence, right?
Exactly. Those tensions resurfaced in March when the NACF chairman Kang Ho-dong aggressively promoted the organization's former vice chairman during the CEO appointment process at NH Investment and Securities. FSS Governor Lee Bak-hun said at a press meeting in March that if managed improperly, it could undermine the principles of separating finance from industry and disrupt the regulatory system established by corporate governance laws. He said this necessitates vigilant oversight from the FSS.
The FSS may face some criticism over whether it is interfering excessively in the private sector, especially given its past history with leadership changes at other major financial groups after the governor's verbal intervention in appointment processes. It will certainly be a delicate balance for the regulator to strike as it moves forward with these inspections into Nonghyup Financial Group and the NACF. In other financial news, Adani Connex, a joint venture between Aid Enterprises and Edge Connex, has established India's largest sustainability-linked financing to raise up to $1.44 billion. The financing has an initial commitment of $875 million, with an option to extend up to $1.44 billion. This brings Adani Connex's total construction financing to $1.65 billion. For more details, let's bring in our correspondent. So what will these new data center facilities be like?
The upcoming data centers will employ cutting-edge technologies and renewable energy solutions. The goal is to minimize the ecological footprint while optimizing operational efficiency. Adani Connex is clearly putting a major emphasis on sustainability with this financing.
And it sounds like they had strong support from international lenders to make this happen. Can you tell us more about that?
Definitive agreements were executed with eight major international banks: ING Bank, Intesa Sanpaolo, KfW IPEX, MUFG Bank, Natixis, Standard Chartered Bank, Societe Generale, and Sumitomo Mitsui Banking Corporation. They all acted as mandated lead arrangers on the financing. ING Bank, MUFG Bank, and Sumitomo Mitsui also served as sustainability coordinators.
This is being called the largest sustainability-linked financing in India. What exactly does sustainability-linked mean in this context?
Sustainability-linked loans tie the borrowing terms to the company's performance on certain environmental, social, and governance criteria. So in this case, Adani Connex likely committed to specific sustainability targets, and meeting those targets could impact the interest rate or other terms of the financing. It's a way for lenders to incentivize and reward sustainable practices.
And it certainly seems to align with Adani Connex's overall approach. The CEO called this a core element of their capital management plan that will enable them to deliver data centers rooted in sustainability. Any final thoughts on the significance of this deal?
At $1.44 billion, this is a massive financing that really puts Adani Connex on the map as a major player in the data center space, not just in India, but globally. The strong support from international banks also validates their sustainability-focused approach. As demand for data centers continues to boom, Adani Connex looks well-positioned to become a leader in providing these critical facilities in an environmentally responsible way.
Thanks for that in-depth look at this landmark deal for Adani Connex and sustainable data center development in India. Clearly a lot to watch there going forward. Shifting gears to the financial sector, non-bank lender L&T Finance reported a 10.54% rise in its consolidated net profit for the fourth quarter of fiscal year 2023-24, reaching 553.88 crore rupees. However, on a sequential basis, net profit fell 13.5% compared to the previous quarter. For more details on L&T Finance's Q4 results, we're joined by our correspondent. What stood out to you in this earnings report?
A few key things to highlight. L&T Finance saw its net interest income grow 14% year over year to 1,909 crore rupees. The company's net interest margin plus fees and other income also expanded significantly, rising 204 basis points from the same quarter last year to reach 11.25%. This indicates L&T Finance has been able to charge higher rates on its loans while keeping funding costs in check.
The non-bank lender also reported strong growth in retail disbursements. What was behind this 33% year-over-year increase to over 15,000 crore rupees in the fourth quarter?
L&T Finance has been focused on growing its retail book, which includes segments like two-wheeler loans, farm equipment financing, and microloans. The company exceeded its own targets, with the retail book expanding 31% compared to its goal of 25% compound annual growth. The fourth quarter marked the highest ever quarterly retail disbursements for L&T Finance.
Despite this rapid growth, asset quality seems to be holding up, with gross non-performing assets at 3.15% and net NPA at 0.79%. How does this compare to the company's own targets and the industry benchmarks?
L&T Finance is running ahead of its asset quality guidance, which was to keep gross Stage 3 assets below 3% and net Stage 3 assets within 1%. To put this in context, the non-bank lending sector as a whole has been struggling with elevated NPAs in recent years, so L&T Finance's performance is quite strong on a relative basis. Maintaining this will be key as the book grows.
Lastly, the company highlighted that it has nearly completed its so-called retailization strategy. What does this entail, and why is it important for L&T Finance?
Retailization refers to L&T Finance's strategic shift towards retail lending and reducing its reliance on wholesale or infrastructure loans. As of March, retail loans made up 94% of L&T Finance's book, compared to its original target of 80%. This pivot helps de-risk the portfolio and aligns L&T Finance with the higher growth and margins in retail segments.
L&T Finance seems to be firing on all cylinders based on these Q4 numbers. The non-bank lender will need to keep this momentum going as it enters the new fiscal year. Thanks for those insights. And with that, we wrap up our stories for today. Thanks for listening to Simply Finance. We'll see you back here tomorrow.